Welcome, all of you fellow Arcanists out there, to the Frisk Guild podcast, where we explore an amazing world full of mystical creatures and their partners. Our hosts are Eric Smith and Scott Wareham, and they'll be your guides along this journey through death and dragons. So grab your eldrin, strap on your swords, and get ready to defend the Argo Empire from evil. Throughout this series, if you've not caught up to the chapters being discussed today, we urge you to hit the pause button, grab your copy of this wonderful book, and catch up. We'll be here when you get back. Adventure, competition, a duel to the death. While on a journey to the famous city of Thronehold, Volkstaven learns of the Sovereign Dragon Tournament. The massive celebration involves hundreds of Arcanists competing for fame and glory, and Volk is determined to win. Dark forces dwell in the city, however, and rumors of the legendary World Serpent spread amongst the shadows. Whoever bonds with a godlike mystical creature will gain magic beyond compare, and the Queen's guards suspect cutthroats will use the chaos of the tournament to hide their plotting. Unsure who to trust, Volk investigates the terrible rumors while advancing in the ranks of the tournament. Unfortunately, the true villain may be closer than he realizes. So, without further ado, let's get into chapters 1 through 5 of Colosseum Arcanist.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Frisk Guild podcast. I'm your host, Eric.
I'm co-host Scott.
And today we are delving into the Colosseum Arcanist book, and we are just so excited about this today. Before we get into anything else, though, again, always want to remind you, please, whatever platform you're listening on, whether it's podcast or YouTube, whatever you can, please just leave us a review. It always lets us know how we're doing. If you're on YouTube, you know, hit the like, share, subscribe, all that good stuff to get it out to more people. Maybe more people that are interested in Frisk Guild as it is and just aren't aware of the podcast yet. And with that, we'll get into chapter 1 of Colosseum Arcanist today.
I am excited. This is one of my favorite books, so really excited to go back through it and dive into it a little more. And it opens up with this great scene of Volk just being gouged in the face by a phoenix, which I think is an amazing way to wake up, considering that Luthair probably could have just woken him up on his own once he heard Forsyth was there. But either way, take a little bit of pain with your pleasure. And the reason that he's getting gouged by this phoenix is that Zaxxas is extremely motivated. He is spending as much time as he can training, and he wants Volk to train with him. So Luthair, in trying to motivate Volk, actually quotes the pillar. He says, "Discipline, without it, we are not masters of our own fate." And this is just a huge win for Volk that Luthair actually knows the pillars well enough to quote them.
And this is big because, like, even in the very beginning of Dread Pirate, Zaxxas uses the pillars to motivate Volk. Like, if you wanted to get Volk to do something, quote any of the pillar, any of the steps, and I guarantee Volk's like, okay, I guess I have to now because the pillar says so.
And I get the feeling that you don't even have to quote an applicable step. Just the fact that you quoted a step would be enough to get Volk there.
Right.
And as Volk goes out, he and Zaxxas are actually going to spar. They're no Eldrin, so it is 1v1 sparring going on. And surprise, surprise, Zaxxas's weapon is his fists. That feels like it just fits extremely well. And Forsyth cheers Zaxxas on, and Volk asks Luthair, you know, who he is rooting for. And I really, really wanted Luthair to pick Zaxxas or say, you know, I'm rooting for you, Volk, but I think Zaxxas is going to win. So just a funny moment between them where I really wanted Luthair to throw in some comedic relief. And as they get into it, it is magical powers back and forth. Volk is using his shadow tentacles. Zaxxas is using his flamethrower.
And Zaxxas uses his future sight on Volk to predict what Volk's going to do.
He only has so many moves, so it fits very well, but he does use his terrors. And then he pauses, not wanting to hurt Zaxxas, even though Zaxxas has healing powers as an Arcanist, should heal very quickly. And Luthair is extremely annoyed about this because this seems to also be Volk's downfall in real battles. He stops short, doesn't want to hurt people, doesn't want to finish the battle. And this actually leads to Zaxxas winning, and Volk has this oddly jealous moment back and forth with Zaxus, where he's jealous of the work Zaxus has been putting in and the muscle that he's growing. And I think it's funny because in similar moments, you see Zaxus being jealous of Volk because of his relationship with Ilya. So it's this back and forth between them where they're both jealous at each other and upset about each other and standing up for each other. And it almost feels like a sibling rivalry.
Right. And it's almost like Zaxus is also jealous of like Volk's relationship with Zelfry too, because Volk's the one that's always getting put in charge and all that good stuff. So I feel like they're, like you're saying, they have their own strengths and weaknesses, and they're always comparing their weakness to each other and being jealous of the wrong thing instead of looking at what the other one has going for themselves and trying to learn from that.
It's a very interesting relationship, and it feels very relatable just because I know I've had relationships where I'm jealous of something and you mention it to the other person and they barely recognize it in themselves. So it's always harder to see the good qualities in yourself, and much easier to see, you know, where you feel you're failing in others.
When, and like you said, with Zaxus being as toned as he is and getting so much muscle, I want to say that like Zaxus is basically his making his own testosterone, you know, his own steroids, basically.
Yeah, he's using his healing powers on himself after training so that he doesn't get sore, which is really smart idea on his part. And after they finish their spar, that brings us into chapter 2, which is remedial studies. And Zelfry comes up to the pair and first tells Zaxus to put a shirt on. And he doesn't have any because they are all burnt off. So Volk has to lend him one, but Zaxus doesn't really fit into it. So it's super tight, which also fits with his whole over macho attitude at the time. Zaxus confesses to Volk that he is jealous of Volk's relationship with Ilya. And he wants Ilya to, you know, see him in a good light. He actually says that he's going to announce his feelings for Ilya. So he wants Volk to go ahead and put in a good word for him. And this is, I think, a really good moment for Zaxus because it shows that he's planning something out in advance. He's not rushing into it. He's trying to make sure that there is a positive relationship there before he tries to spark something with Ilya.
What? Zaxus planning things out and not just rushing into things?
It's why you can see the growth. It's character growth at its best.
This is true.
The guild gets called together, which is why Zelfry had gone out to them to bring them in to meet with the guild. And we do meet another Master Arcanus, which is Master Vala, and the Wood Nymph Eldrin. And the Wood Nymph is described as being a humanoid woman with the skin of a birch tree and branches of a willow tree for hair. So very, very nature focused. And we find out that one of the things that the Master Arcanist helps with is preserving all of the library and making sure none of the books are damaged or the information that's lost.
I think that some of its augmentation or manipulation actually probably would be that it's able to control how much like oxygen or oxygen levels in the library itself. Because I know that that has a lot to do with the preservation of books, especially with potential for fire and that kind of thing. So we don't really get any kind of more information on a wood nymph specifically. So I would have to guess that probably like manipulation of oxygen would be one of its abilities.
Yeah, somehow being able to manipulate growth, manipulate decay. Very, very interesting. But unfortunately, like you said, we don't get too much insight into it. While the guild is gathering, Zelfry calls together his apprentices and straightforward to them, puts them in two groups, the group that's doing well and the group that's not doing well. So Volk, Zaxus, and Hexa get put off to the side as the doing well group, and they're supposed to go train on their own. And then Ilya, Adelgis, and Addy are all going to spend some extra time with Zelfry trying to catch up on their skills. So I find this very funny and very blunt as a way of telling your apprentices where they stand.
Yuda was very like, I've been putting this off for a very long time, and I should have done this a lot sooner. It's on me. Like, he's very, very adamant about emphasizing that.
Yeah, he really, really wants them to know. And I don't know if it's a motivational tactic, if it is a competitive tactic, but it definitely seems to work. And they definitely are focused on, you know, training and bettering themselves. And one of the ways that Volk finds out is that he can use his augmentation to make other people see in the dark. So it's not just an innate ability that he has, but he can pass that on to others. And he's practicing this with Hexa in a brightly lit library, which sounds bad at first, but then Volk does point out that with his second bonding, he can feel when the magic is activated. So he'll know whether or not he uses it, even if Hexa can't actually see any difference. Shortly after this, we meet another Arcanist, Rio, who comes running into the room to talk to Zelfri. And Rio is an Agata Toad Arcanist, which is a giant toad. And he is talking to Zelfri. And as he's talking, Zelfri is rushed and goes out of the room with him. And Adele just reads his thoughts, thankfully. And we find out that they're actually going to be escorting some plague-ridden creatures once they get to Fortuna.
Yay, more plague-ridden creatures. Just what they wanted.
The fun never ends.
I mean, they were assigned to specifically the plague-ridden creatures tasks. So
that brings us to Chapter 3, which is an epic journey. And Volk is trying to use his augmentation to make others see in the dark, but he cannot figure it out. And as he's doing this, Hexa looks to him for help with some of her magic, and he accidentally calls her slow, which she rightfully takes offense at. But he does get her to learn or decide to that she should learn to throw daggers or to use a pistol because it's very easy to spread the poison from the Hydra that way. They finish up some of their training and the guild gathers to find out more details about the next mission. They don't truthfully know about the plague-ridden creatures yet. They just have Adelgis's mind-reading powers to use. But we do find out some more about the size of the guild. It's about 70 people in total, all living on the Atlas Turtle. And that contains 4 Master Arcanists, which we've met most of them. Zelfri's a Master Arcanist. We just met Vala, who's the Wood Nymph Arcanist. And then the 2 new ones are Gauss the Grey, who's a Kraken Arcanist. And then Yesna, the Master of Colossus. In addition to that, there's about 30 hired help who are not Arcanists. There's 14 apprentices, 21 journeymen, and then Eventide topping it all off as the guildmaster. And they find out that they're actually going to be escorting Gilly, and Gilly did make them trinkets that will prevent the arcane plague from infecting them. So at least they have a little bit of protection this time, other than just, you know, trying not to get bitten or and come in contact with blood. We also hear for the first time of Queen Valetta, and Zelfri makes some comments that he is not fond of her. She is the queen of the Argo Empire, and we'll kind of learn a little bit more about her as we go along the journey. And the whole guild is not all going to be escorting the creatures. There are also some who are going to be trying to recruit new members who are going to gather resources. And the main goal really is that they know the World Serpent is going to be out there, and it's going to require a lot of resources to actually be able to bond with the World Serpent. So trying to prepare for that once they're able to find where it's at.
I like that Eventide has the foresight to realize that she needs to bulk up the guild and that she needs to prepare for this kind of war, I guess, if you want to call it that. And having some of the Master Arcanists go out with their apprentices or soon-to-be journeymen to help get guild members and to be able to really bulk them up, because she feels that she needs to have more. And it's going to be a smart play for later. And then moving into Chapter 4, we have the Sovereign Dragon Tournament. And this is our first conversation about Thronehold. And Volk is curious about how big Thronehold is. He does ask Luthair, and Luthair does mention that Thronehold is much larger than Fortuna. And I can only imagine Volk's brain can only explode so much, because he thinks Fortuna is huge because he's comparing it to the Isle of Ruma. And now he's being told, like, Thronehold is this massive place, much bigger than anywhere else. So again, I can only imagine how like mind blown his brain is right now. Thronehold is also said to have merchants from all over the world, and everybody from all over the world comes to sell in the marketplace, and that the city guards are made up of Pegasus and Unicorn Arcanus. Ilya is actually fairly resolute in finding the World Serpent. I'm actually kind of surprised with that, and I know she can kind of, she seems like she hyperfixates. It's a good thing because she's, you know, very much, I'm going to make that thing happen. I'm going to get my task accomplished. She really doesn't care who bonds with the World Serpent. She is literally just, as long as it's not Callisto.
And this feels very much like the right idea, but the wrong reason. She got yelled at from Zelfree before about doing things for, you know, her own wants rather than the wants of the guild. And although it's great that Callisto would not be World Serpent Arcanist, it also feels like she should be doing it not because of her negative feelings towards him, but about how he could impact the world if he was a World Serpent Arcanist.
Right, like, let's just, it's more so the, hey, let's not have the Dread Pirate bond with the World Serpent, more so than, I hate Callisto, he took my eye, death to him, that's why I don't want him to have it. So Volk also starts to mature a little bit more and realizes that he needs to really just start powering through the pain of using his magic to get any better. This is something that has been kind of foreshadowed in the last couple of books, and you can definitely tell anytime he does use his magic, he is hurt. But as he's using his magic, he's slowly and surely, like, it's hurting him less and less.
It very much feels like building up a muscle. He pushes it, he's training with his magic, and then he's sore from it, and he's got to recover, but he's able to push a little farther the next time. So it's unfortunate that he does face that, but it is nice that he learns that he can become more and more adept at powering through. And this is also a fun moment. We see Hexa spar with Zaxxas, and Zaxxas wins again. And Hexa makes this comment that she completely forgot to use her weapons in the battle, which feels like it should be the first thing you think of when you get into a battle. You know, maybe I should pull out my weapons. But she forgot about that and lost as a result.
She even tries to make an excuse of, oh, Zaxxas made the ring intentionally small for me.
You think that would be better for closer up? She doesn't have to, she can use her poison more effectively.
Right. She could spread it around a lot faster, I would imagine. But again, Zaxxas probably saw that coming, so he had a plan for it, I bet.
He plans now, so he was prepared.
A little bit. Just a little bit. And that's vastly more than what he used to. So we'll give him credit. We'll say he like 100% improvement on planning. I think Texas's personal hell is required to be sitting in a library reading a book. Because when Zelfree tells Zaxxas that reading books from every now and then will not kill him, I feel like he wants to die. Because he's sitting there reading a book. And even he's not even very respectful with said books, because when he's fighting with Hexa or sparring with Hexa before they go into Fortuna, he throws the book on the ground and just lets it soak in the water from the dew on Gentle's back. We see that Zaxxas at any point in time is basically eating, and he's doing this as a way to recover from his working out, his exercises. He's basically creating his own steroids, like we said earlier, and I think that he would even rival a hobbit's appetite in how much he purely eats.
Yes, he is constantly snacking on anything he can find. He's carrying food with him and just pulling it out of pouches, and very sneaky and hobbit-like him.
Like, he's got a dedicated pouch for his snacks. So after Hexa and Zaxxas get done with their bout, they decide to go ahead and head to the docks to get to Fortuna. And as they're traveling in the dinghy from Gentle to the docks, they see a Kraken. So this is one of the Master Arcanists in as well. When they make it to the port, we meet Gilly again. So since she's standing down on the docks, and she sees Volk and just loses it. she comes running over and gives him this huge hug. And she's looking at Volk up and down after she gives him a hug. And she's talking about how he's getting more lean. He's getting more defined. And she actually even starts to chastise Zelfry because she thinks that Volk is being underfed. And then she looks around and, oh, okay, you know, these are the rest of the apprentices. And she does give everybody else a compliment.
And she thankfully doesn't comment when she learns that Volk and Ilya are siblings. She doesn't make any comment about them looking different, which I can only imagine how quickly that gets old when you are, you know, adopted siblings and everyone is harping on how you don't look like real siblings.
So Gilly and everybody walks over to the caravan that's set up, and word of the Sovereign Dragon Tournament is happening. And this is a very special occasion because it's only held after the birth of a sovereign dragon. And everybody's kind of like, well, okay, is this really that important? Because we know that phoenixes only are born every 10 years. And Hexa reminds everybody, like, sovereign dragons don't have like a set schedule of when they're born, like phoenixes. They could go centuries between being born. So again, the birth of a sovereign dragon is huge. And then they also explain that only a sovereign dragon, Arcanus, can rule the Argo Empire.
And I was curious on this one. What happens if they die and there are no more sovereign dragon? Does it pass on to another?
Oh, that's a good question, because I'm fairly certain the sovereign dragons are progeny born.
Yeah, I know.
Or are they fable?
I'm not sure offhand. Let's pull up the wiki.
For everybody that's not familiar, Frith Chronicles wiki is amazing because it has all this information for us. Sovereign dragons are progeny.
There you go. So it very well could be a case when they go extinct.
If they all die, then there's no more sovereign dragons anymore. The more you know.
The more you know.
All right, going into chapter 5, the antler trinket. Everybody is so excited about the Sovereign Dragon Tournament and participating in it. And when I say everybody, I mean Hexa mainly, and Zaxxas is excited, and Nicolin is excited. Again, we see Ilya not being as excited because she's more so wanting to make sure that she gets to the World Serpent first. Volk initially is leery about wanting to participate because he's like, well, crap, if I'm an apprentice and I've only been bonded for like a year and a half at this point, then I'm going to get my ass whooped by some master arcanist that's been, you know, been bonded for several decades or, you know, centuries. But Gilly does explain that they do them in steps. So anybody that's been bonded for 2 years or less is going to fight in the apprentice round, and then so on and so forth for the journeyman, master, and the elite rounds as well. And of all the reasons that Volk decides that he wants to train harder, not because of Zaxxas and his competition with Zaxxas, not because Luthier is trying to encourage him with the steps, but he decides the tournament. The tournament is what he wants to, what he really wants to push himself for.
And this just feels like Ilya's, you know, right idea, the wrong reasons. You are every year getting hounded by and tried to be killed by someone. Those should probably be the motivating factors, not winning a tournament.
Right. Like, again, let's make survival a fairly good reason for this, especially because you know that you're in a guild that's going to put you in a dangerous position, especially because you're dealing with plague-ridden mystical creatures, because that's what your specific master and apprentices are involved with. So maybe survival should be a better one, but I guess if it motivates him, it motivates him, right?
Do what it takes.
So they go to the convoy, and it's all being pulled by horses. And I didn't realize that there was just horses in this. And it makes sense, I guess, because you don't want to have Pegasus or unicorns pulling carriages like a petty horse. But everybody's like, oh my gosh, there's a horse. Like, they're more enthralled with that than they are any mystical creature. One of these carriages that are being pulled actually contains plague-ridden beasts. And they went like all extra about making sure that nobody messes with these carriages. like the carriages are in the middle of the caravan, so they're in one of the safest places. They're not going to get ambushed from the front or the back. They've got chains wrapped around this thing. They've got signs everywhere. They've got locks everywhere and pretty much signs on like next to the lock saying don't open. So like they are making sure that they're very adamant about don't open this carriage. Zelfry comes by, kind of give everybody the instructions, and everybody is adamant about finding out more about this tournament because again, Hexa is over the moon excited about this. And she wants to know if they can compete because there's going to be other things the Frith Guild is going to have to do when they get to Thronehold. And Zelfry's like, okay, well, in order for you to compete in the tournament, I need you to listen.
And my first thought is if that's the rule, nobody's going to get to compete. If we've learned anything so far.
I imagine he probably would have taken a bet of like, you know what? I bet they aren't going to actually listen. So I'm going to not let them compete. There's even a point while Zelfry's explaining that everybody's going to be taking shifts to watch the carriage with the plague ridden creatures. Volk's going to be put on the night duty, obviously, with his ability to see in the dark. And he's also put on trying to train that ability to see at night to somebody else while he's on duty with whoever he's on duty with.
And this is assuming that he can actually figure out how to do it. He's struggled with it so far. So hopefully he can, you know, come through when it's needed.
Right. And just needs to look at it from a different angle, I guess. So Elfrey is also handing out these trinkets that Gilly made that makes them immune to the arcane plague. And Zelfry gives them very simple instructions for these. Never take it off. This is what protects you from the arcane plague and from you getting infected. So I don't think I would need to be told twice or be emphasized that I should never take this thing off. But yeah, again, it's a good emphasis to put on there. And because of Zaxxas's ability to consistently burn his clothes, they give him a special trinket just so that way he doesn't accidentally burn it in the process. Now, at this point, Nicolin has had enough listening, and Zelfry is kind of that, like, okay, does anybody have any more questions? And Nicolin just kind of pops his head up and is like, how much listening is enough listening to participate in this tournament?
You need to know the minimum amount required.
Right, and just the, like, pinching the bridge of the nose, like, oh my gosh, like, why do I have to constantly deal with this, you know? Thankfully, Luthair has decided to start helping Volk, being not surprised, and announces that somebody is approaching that is invisible. Volk kind of looks around, and he basically is standing there, and Fane drops his invisibility. And at first, Volk is very confused, actually really upset. He starts to look around at everybody else that's in the area, and kind of that, like, everybody's seeing him too, right? Like, I'm not the only one that's seeing him. And like, this guy, is he supposed to be here? Or after nobody like freaks out about the fact that Fane is there, Volk starts to have a conversation with him. And Fane tells Volk that he's actually going to Thronehold to speak with the queen. And he's actually participating on behalf of Gilly as not necessarily as apprentice, but I'm not sure as a, not a companion or something of the similar, but he's their colleague, I guess. At that point, Wraith decides to drop his invisibility as well. And Volk notices something. There's something different with Wraith. And he realizes that Wraith is actually missing his antlers. And he kind of clicks into place that all the trinkets that they were handed are what's making them immune to the plague. And Wraith is the one that sacrificed his antlers to make these trinkets.
And Wraith makes a comment that, you know, he's happily willing to essentially amputate himself because he knows it'll help Fane, and that's a sacrifice he's willing to make. So it's great to see the bond between them, as, you know, always that bond between the Arcanist and the Eldrin, just so much stronger than anything else.
Yeah, we are appreciative of Wraith doing that and allowing Gilly to be able to make these trinkets to make them immune to the arcane plague. Volk's trying to be supportive of Fane, especially after finding out about what Wraith had done to try to help with everybody else. And Volk's kind of digging deeper with questions with Fane. And we find out Fane's real name is Tenet or Thibault Rousten. Volk is like, well, you know what? My last name is not actually Savon either. It's my born name is Volk Blackwater.
And there's some joking back and forth where Volk is almost surprised that Fane took up a second name. And he comments that, well, did you think Spider was really her name?
Like, this is not my given name at birth. Like, what kind of name do you think that would be? Especially with, like, Spider.
Yeah, there's some wild pirates out there. These are chosen names.
We're just going to make it easier for them later on in life and just name them Spiders. So that way we just don't have to worry about it, okay?
They look like they're going to be a pirate when they grow up.
And this is where we end with Chapter 5 already in Colosseum Arcanist. Of course, we're going to go over the bestiary section next and starting off with the Kraken. So with the Kraken, it is a terrifyingly powerful creature resembling a squid with 10 octopus-like arms. And then not much is really known in this world about the Kraken. I know that there's been several like Greek mythologies of the Kraken and other places as well. So the Kraken is able to evocate storm winds and is able to manipulate water, and understandably so, since it is an underwater creature. And it also has passive abilities of breathing underwater for their Arcanist.
The other mythical creature we're introduced to, and we talked about a little bit already, was the wood nymph. So a humanoid creature with the skin of bark and tree branches for hair. And it isn't specific in what the magical powers are, but we do know that they are able to keep books from decaying. So like we mentioned earlier, there's likely something going on with controlling air or oxygen levels or something else that might affect how things age.
I believe it's also mentioned when they're in the library doing their research and studying, because, you know, books will actually do things to help them learn, not just running up and punching things in the face. It's also mentioned that it looks like the wood nymph is actually the one that created the furniture within the library as well, like the chairs that they're sitting in, that kind of thing. So we do know that they have some abilities. It's just not explicitly stated within that what exactly they can and can't do. Thank you guys for listening. I want to give a special thanks to Dan Mackeson, our editor. We can be found on Podbean, Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Facebook, and then we're also on YouTube. So if you want to watch a YouTube video rather than listen, we are on YouTube. We do also want to give a special shout out to Frith Chronicles Fandom, as we actually even pulled them up in this episode. So thank them for that work that they do. You can get in touch with us by emailing us at frithguildpod@gmail.com. Or if you want to go on to our Facebook page, and you can send us a message or comment on the page itself. We are beyond the moon again. I know, Scott, this is one of your favorite books too, about getting into Colosseum, and I've actually gotten like the next couple chapters already ready to go pretty much for the next episode, just because I'm so excited to read this book. Scott, did you have anything else you want to add today?
I'm with you. I'm queued up and ready, and ready for the tournament when it comes.
All right. Well, thank you for all listening, and we'll talk to you next week.